place. Joss's steps slowed, his heart all but stopped. He was going to have to fight his uncle. And he couldn't. Abraham was too skilled, too eager to win, too serious about everything. He'd hurt Joss badly. He might even kill him. Joss swallowed hard, but he didn't speak. Abraham looked past him, furrowing his brow.
Chaz, you missed your mark. Don't tell me you fell asleep waiting for the boy. Or didn't you think he'd make it this far?
Joss waited, not speaking, not wanting to provoke any kind of reaction at all from Abraham, keeping his eyes on his uncle the entire time, mostly on the silver-tipped stake in the leather holster on his hip. Abraham shot him a look, one that confounded Joss completely, and darted off down the trail. After about 20 yards, he dove into the trees on the left side. Joss blinked and followed his steps hesitant. When he reached his uncle, his stomach felt like it was made of lead. Abraham was standing over Chaz's body. Chaz was dead, his eyes staring lifelessly into the surrounding forest. Abraham pinched the bridge of his nose and squeezed his eyes shut, as if trying to snuff out even the smallest show of emotion. Joss had a feeling it was all an act. Abraham had killed Chaz, because Abraham was really the rogue slayer. After all, it was the perfect ruse, wasn't it? Point all blame to his nephew with the knowledge of a past new recruit's betrayal? Something that would only fuel the fire. Joss was an easy target, and Abraham had had easy access to both Malik and Chaz. He glared at his uncle, sizing him up, wondering if he had the power to take him down for the good of the society. Behind him, Joss heard the rustle of branches and undergrowth. He turned to find Kreshen and Ash entering the woods. Both looked shocked when their eyes fell on Chaz's corpse. Joss opened his mouth to outwardly accuse his uncle, but before he could, Abraham looked at the slayers and nodded toward his nephew. They slanted their eyes, and Joss knew that he was in trouble. Abraham had just pinned a second murder on him. Chapter 22. A Dying Flame. Kreshen and Ash grabbed Joss by each arm, yanking him wordlessly from where he stood. He could feel their anger and sense their questions, but neither uttered a word. As they dragged him through the woods and along the trail, Joss didn't speak either. He merely clenched his jaw tight, not certain what to say or what to do. It wasn't like he could outwardly accuse his uncle now of these horrible acts, of betraying the Slayer Society in the worst way possible. For one, he didn't have any evidence to support his theory, just an intensely strong gut feeling. And everybody knew that intuition wasn't exactly counted as a valid argument in a court of law. For two, this was Abraham McMillan, one of the most highly regarded slayers of his time. The society counted on him and barely recognized that Joss even existed. Why would they take his word over his uncle's when he had no proof, just a sickening feeling? They wouldn't, and that was the truth of it. Joss was trapped, and there wasn't a damn thing he could do about it, but see it through until he'd gathered some hard evidence. They were taking him to the house. Joss felt a small flicker of hope ignite inside his chest. Cyrus was at the house. Cyrus would make them listen to reason. After all, Cyrus was sure and strong and honest. He liked Joss, and he'd listen like no one else would, and convince the other slayers of the hypocrisy that was taking place right inside their own group. As Kreshen kicked open the door, Joss clung to that flicker, and allowed it, just for a moment, to grow into a small, hesitant flame. Kreshen tugged Joss through the door, and Ash moved behind him, pinning his arms as if he were a prisoner who'd been daring an escape. In truth, Joss hadn't fought against them at all. He knew better. These men were skilled trackers, skilled hunters, skilled killers. And what's more, Joss was innocent. The innocent never run, so he made a point to cooperate fully. But still they yanked on him, practically carrying him through the kitchen as if he'd fought against their efforts with mad force. Cyrus was standing at the stove. He'd looked up when the door had been kicked in, and when his eyes fell on Joss, they filled with a questioning look. Joss tried to communicate silently with him, hoping the expression on his face would explain enough to his friend that he'd realized that Joss needed him, needed his help, like never before. Cyrus didn't nod. Didn't make any facial expressions that showed that he understood or that he'd do whatever he could to help Joss out of the mess that he'd gotten himself into. His face was blank as he looked at Ash.
What's happened?
We found Malik's killer. Ash needlessly tightened his grip on Joss's forearm. Ever since the day that Malik had been found murdered, Ash had never liked Joss. He shouldn't have been surprised that it had been Ash at the campfire that night to accuse him of murdering Malik. But he was. Maybe because they had become more than co-slayers in the past weeks. They had become a family. And now his family believed him to be a murderer, a betrayer in the worst of all possible ways. Cyrus's eyes went wide. He flicked his gaze from Ash to Kraytian, but kept his eyes off of Joss. The small flame of hope within Joss's chest began to waver, suffocated by fear.
Really? Joss?
Kraytian nodded, an air of sadness hanging over him.
He may have killed Chaz, too. We just found him on the trail.
Joss swallowed hard, resisting the urge to dispute what Kraytian had just said. Technically, the body had been in the woods, not on the trail. And technically, it had been Abraham who had found it. And wasn't that convenient? Abraham had been the closest to Chaz while Joss was running and defending himself from Kraytian and Ash. It would have been easy for Abraham to take Chaz out, so why wasn't anyone else seeing it? Because, Joss thought, the Slayers loved Abraham. They knew him. He was one of them, and Joss wasn't. Joss was just a boy who had been thrust into their routine, invaded their peace. They didn't like him. They didn't even want him here, despite the camaraderie he felt with them during his training sessions. He was alone in this. Not even Cyrus seemed to care. He'd been a fool to count them among his family. He didn't have a family. He was just the invisible boy, nothing else. The flame died out completely, and Joss lowered his head. As Ash and Kraytian dragged him through the kitchen into the dining room, Joss lifted his head for a moment. He just couldn't believe that Cyrus wasn't going to help him. He'd thought Cyrus was his friend. Had the entire thing been nothing but a ruse? Some twisted kind of test set up by Abraham from the beginning? No. He refused to believe it. He looked at Cyrus, wishing like anything that they could have 10 minutes alone so that Joss could explain everything. Cyrus met his eyes. Joss had expected to see that the internal kindness had faded away like a mask ripped off after a masquerade. But there it was in Cyrus's eyes, compassion, understanding, and concern. Inside Joss's chest, that flame flickered again. It was small and uncertain, but it was there. Ash released Joss's arm and Kraytian practically threw him into a chair. Then Ash pointed at him, his finger so close to Joss's face that it tickled his eyelashes and said, "Make one move and I'll tie you to that chair, boy." Joss said nothing, but relaxed his body, trying to retain some sense of calm and hoping it would show the Slayers that he wasn't about to attempt an escape. Ash stood back, folding his arms in front of him, keeping a close, watchful eye on their prisoner. Moments later, the silent room was filled with sound as Abraham entered the house, bringing the remaining Slayers with him. No one spoke. Clearly, Abraham had briefed them all before bringing them back to the house, but the sound of their boots on the aged hardwood floors reminded Joss of thunder. It was fitting, he thought, because a storm was coming, one that Joss might not survive. Once all the Slayers were in the room, some seated on chairs around the table, some standing, all of them wearing expressions of anger, hurt, and disbelief, Abraham's voice boomed through the room.
"Joss McMillan, I accuse you of the foulest deed, turning on your fellow Slayers, betraying our trust, and taking the lives of both Malik and Chaz. How do you plead?"
"Let's not forget protocol, Abraham."
Cyrus's voice was hushed, but nevertheless it commanded the attention of every Slayer there. He was seated across the table from Joss, his hands folded neatly in front of him, his head bowed slightly as if in prayer. He raised his head and looked pointedly at Abraham.
"According to Slayer Society rules, one cannot be tried by his individual group, merely accused. It's up to the Society to try and convict a Slayer. What's more, Joss isn't an indoctrinated Slayer. so he isn't held by our rules. Abraham's face went white. Daggers shot from his eyes into Cyrus, which told Joss that his uncle wasn't used to being wrong.
True. Joss hasn't been indoctrinated. But if he is guilty of taking the lives of two slayers, then something must be done. A person cannot simply commit crimes and evade justice.
Cyrus shrugged, his voice eerily calm. So involved the police. Abraham's response wasn't nearly as loud, brash, or boastful as before. It was as if Cyrus had somehow managed to take a bit of the wind out of his sails.
You know we can't do that, Cyrus. Local authorities would complicate the society's plans.
Besides, this is your nephew we're talking about, and you wouldn't want him to go to prison, would you, Abraham? Cyrus met and held Abraham's gaze. It was a dare, almost as if he and Cyrus had previously discussed just this, and Cyrus was bringing it up again just to prove a point. The very thought made Joss's heart flutter. Had his uncle actually expressed an ounce of care about him? No. He doubted it strongly. Abraham didn't care for him. He didn't even like him. Abraham dropped his eyes to the table for a moment.
My relationship with Joss has nothing to do with this hearing.
Doesn't it, Uncle Abraham?
Joss stood slowly, pushing his chair back and placing his palms on the table's surface to keep them from shaking. He had put up with so much up until now. Abraham's seeming disappointment in him from the very start, the accusations of murder, the personal training sessions that seemed more like Abraham's method of punishing him for something he couldn't identify, and now he was being put on trial without even being asked whether or not he had any idea what was really going on. It was too much to bear, and Joss could no longer stay silent.
If you ask me, I think it has everything to do with it. You never liked me, and certainly never hoped that I would be the next slayer in our bloodline. You've been after me the entire time I've been here. It's like you want me to fail, like you don't want me to ever be indoctrinated into the society and are determined to punish me for trying. And isn't it convenient that slayers start dying off the moment I show up? What an easy way to be rid of the embarrassment of me for good.
A low mutter raced through the crowd, one that Cyrus gave voice to. What are you saying, Joss? That Abraham knows who took the lives of Malik and Chaz? Joss met his friend's eyes. As he readied the words on his tongue, a shock of fear shot through him. Fear of their reaction, mostly, but also fear of what Abraham might do or say. Not to mention fear that he'd put Cyrus into a very uncomfortable position with the society.
More than that, Cyrus. I think Abraham killed them and is using me as a scapegoat.
The room fell so silent that Joss could hear his own heart thumping inside of his chest. No one moved, no one breathed for a very long time. Then Abraham shook his head slowly.
It's senseless. It's asinine. Why would I wait 20 years to start taking the lives of slayers?
Maybe you were waiting for the right moment, or maybe your loyalties have only recently shifted.
Joss tilted his head some as he met his uncle's eyes. Abraham moved so fast that Joss barely had time to register it before his uncle was just inches from his face, gripping the front of Joss's shirt.
Are you actually questioning my loyalty to the cause? You haven't been training for half a summer yet. What do you know of loyalty, boy?
Joss's heart was racing. He knew his uncle was capable of killing him, and at the moment, he got the impression that Abraham was anxious to take his life. But he had to remain strong, had to stay vigilant. It was the only way to prove his innocence to the others, to Cyrus, who didn't need for him to prove it at all.
I know that the vampire who spoke to me in town knew you by name and acted as though you'd interacted several times.
A look crossed Abraham's face then, one filled with shock, confusion, and amazingly, fear. He released Joss's shirt and stepped back, shaking his head.
This is ridiculous!
Joss's eyes were locked on his uncle's, because there was something else,
something that surprised even him. He was looking into the eyes of an innocent man. Shaking his head, too, admonishing himself for having jumped to such a drastic conclusion when the answer to the recent Slayer murders was so obvious, Joss said, "It may be ridiculous, but it doesn't feel good to be accused, does it?" Abraham paced the room for a moment before turning back to Joss, his voice calm, almost as calm as Cyrus's had been a moment before.
"Did you kill Malik, Joss?"
"No."
"And Chaz, did you take his life?"
"No, Uncle, I didn't."
Joss held Abraham's gaze, hoping that he would see the innocence in Joss's eyes the way that Joss had seen it in his. Then Abraham sighed, shaking his head. He tilted his face up toward the ceiling and sighed again.
"So who did?"
While Joss was certain that the question was completely rhetorical, he took his seat once again and said,
"If it's not you, Abraham, and it's not me, then maybe it's the obvious."
The surrounding Slayers blinked at him, overwhelmed by recent events and the loss of their friends. They needed guidance, and Joss was happy to give it to them.
"Vampires. There's a hive nearby. Maybe they killed the Slayers. And what's more, wouldn't doing so in a way that made us accuse one another be a brilliant way of spreading doubt among our ranks? It would weaken us as a whole, has weakened us as a whole, and isn't that the way to really take down a well-oiled machine?"
Joss looked from one face to the next. His fellow Slayers, his family. They were broken, but could be mended, and Joss wanted more than anything to lead that charge. He loved them. Here, among his fellow Slayers, he was anything but invisible. One by one they nodded, accepting his theory. It was so obvious and such an embarrassment that they would turn inwardly rather than toward the enemy in a time of crisis. Cyrus relaxed in his seat, looking more than a little bit relieved that the accusations hadn't gone any further. Something told Joss that being put on trial by the Slayer Society was the last thing that he wanted to experience. Abraham stepped closer and extended his arm, shaking Joss's hand. His eyes were warm and apologetic.
"I relinquish my accusation, nephew."
Joss smiled, but it was fleeting. Smiling hurt too much with all the bruises he'd received on his run.
"Ditto, Abraham. We're cool."
"Joss? What have they done to you?"
Kat dropped the box of medical supplies she'd been carrying over from the other house and rushed into the room, her horrified eyes locked on Joss's face, which was still crusted with dried blood and the filth of the trail. She looked worried, and that suspicion was still there in her eyes. As she hurried across the room to Joss, Abraham caught her by the arm and tossed her backward.
"I don't recall inviting you to this gathering, miss."
Kat tightened her jaw stubbornly, defiantly. Her eyes were bright and clear, her hair shining in the afternoon light that was pouring in through the window. For the first time, Joss thought she was beautiful, absolutely stunning. She practically hissed at Abraham.
"I don't remember asking your permission for me to be here. Now what have you done to Joss? He's covered in bruises and blood. His eyes all puffed up, that gash on his forehead is oozing, he looks awful. If you hurt him, I swear I'll..."
"You'll what?"
Abraham's tone was cool and crisp. Joss knew he didn't care much for Kat, but he wasn't even trying to hide his displeasure at her company now.
"This, my dear, is none of your concern."
Without warning, Kat slapped Abraham hard across the face, the noise sounding out into the room, shocking them all. Joss sucked in his breath in a surprised gasp. Abraham reached up, touching his fingers lightly to his cheek. Then he drew his arm back as if to backhand Kat a good one, but Cyrus and Joss were on him in an instant. They pulled him away from Kat, who stood there glaring at him defiantly. The other Slayers didn't interfere, just watched quietly as if waiting to see how this whole thing might play itself out. Finally, Abraham wrenched himself free of their grasp and turned to Cyrus.
"Either she leaves tomorrow, or you do."
A sick feeling filled Joss's insides. He knew that Abraham wasn't just saying that Cyrus would be packing his bags and leaving. He was saying something horrible, that Cyrus would be kicked out of the society, or worse. He wasn't sure if his uncle had been implying death, but he wasn't about to rule it out as a possibility. After all, he had yet to put all the society's rules to memory. Maybe Cyrus's insubordination over the years had been more serious than Joss had realized. Maybe Cyrus's life was in danger, all because of his inability to leave his daughter again for an entire summer. Joss hoped not, but he really had no idea what Abraham had meant, other than the obvious. Get Kat out of here. Now. Cyrus moved to Kat and gently guided her out the back door by the elbow. As Joss followed, he glanced at Abraham, not wanting to anger him, but knowing that he couldn't leave his friend alone. Not now. But Abraham wouldn't meet his eyes. As Joss moved out the door, he could feel the heat and fuming anger pouring off of Kat. That, coupled with Cyrus's tense silence, made for an awkward walk to the cabin next door. By the time they reached it, Joss was certain that Kat's head was going to explode. Cyrus opened the front door and Kat stepped inside. Once Joss had come in and closed the door behind him, she turned to him.
"What did they do to you? It looks like you've been wrestling or fighting or something. What happened? And don't give me another one of your stupid, vicious wildlife stories, because I'm not buying it. What really happened to you, Joss?"
He looked at Cyrus, who folded his arms in front of him. Cyrus's voice was hushed, as if he were trying to contain his emotions. "Kat, I want you to go upstairs and pack your things. I'm putting you on a train home tonight. It's for the best." Kat's jaw dropped.
"The best? Who says? Abraham? Come on, Cyrus, you can't send me home. You promised we'd spend the summer together."
Joss watched Cyrus carefully. He looked as though he'd crumble at any moment. He needed help. He needed strength. He needed a friend. Joss looked at Kat.
"I think you should do what he says, Kat. Your father has very good reasons for everything he's done. You should trust him. And just go pack your things."
Furious tears filled Kat's eyes, and for a moment, Joss was certain that she'd slap him even harder than she'd slapped Abraham. Then Kat turned and ran up the stairs, slamming her bedroom door behind her. He turned back to Cyrus to try and offer some kind of comfort to his friend, but Cyrus just shook his head and walked away. Joss took that as his cue that Cyrus very much needed to be alone. As he exited the cabin, Joss inhaled a deep breath and released it into the outside air. His insides felt heavy, but he wasn't exactly certain why. Kat would be safer away from this place, and Cyrus would be safer without her here. Joss and Abraham had been cleared of any murderous accusations, and, smallest of all, Joss had managed to complete his run and was reasonably certain he'd pass his test. All for the moment seemed right with the world. So if that was the case, why did he feel so upset, so lost, so angry? There had to be a reason he was feeling this way, and it couldn't just be the fact that vampires were lurking nearby, picking off slayers one by one. He wasn't homesick. The comforting feeling of home had left him long ago, with the loss of Cecile. And though he was physically injured, it hadn't bruised his ego. Quite the contrary, in fact. Joss felt really good about his ability to stand up to two extremely talented fighters. So if none of those things could be the cause of his upset, then what could? As Joss crossed the yard, he turned back to Cyrus and Kat's cabin. Slowly, he realized exactly what was wrong. He was going to miss Kat. Despite the fact that he'd pushed her away and told her to listen to Cyrus and pack, he was going to miss her more than he'd ever admit to, because she was his friend, his first real friend. He knew with absolute certainty why his chest felt so heavy and his stomach ached. Because pieces of your heart clearly weigh more when they're sitting shattered at the bottom of your stomach. Chapter 23. For you, Cecile. Joss woke after a blissfully dreamless sleep and rolled over in his bed, reluctant to open his eyes. He'd tossed and turned for much of the night, repeating to himself every moment that he and Kat had shared, despite his reluctance to even think about her. Thinking about Kat hurt, and thinking about the fact that he was a large part of what was making her leave made him hurt even more. But despite his efforts not to have her in his thoughts, there she was, with every breath, every heartbeat. He'd never really had a friend before, and certainly had never felt about anyone the way that he felt about Kat. He wanted to protect her, the way he'd wanted to protect Cecile. And the only way to do that was to push her away. The only way to save her was to hurt her, and that hurt him as well. More than he would ever dare admit to. Finally, reluctantly, Joss cracked open his eyes. Abraham was sitting quietly in a chair beside his bed, but spoke as if they were continuing a conversation.
"You're quite right about that, nephew. I never hoped that you were the next slayer in our bloodline. I'd hoped for your cousin Greg or even his brother Henry, but not you. You were the runt of the litter, so to speak. Greg was virile and quick, with a steady hand and a confidence that normally pervades our family. Henry was less confident, less physically apt than his brother, but with some training and direction he would have made a fine slayer. Then there was you."
He didn't say it with any intended hurt or malice. His words simply were. They rang of truth, a truth that could not have been easy to share. Nor were they easy to hear.
"You were born a month early, too eager to come into the world, too impatient. And there were signs of weakness even then. You were born jaundiced because of a slight liver problem. It cleared up within months, but other weaknesses followed. You learned to walk later than your cousins, and had a reluctance to run from a very young age. But then, you found your legs, and I saw that you could outrun anyone around you. I wanted it not to be true. Your incredible agility waited for it to prove itself false, but there it was. You had a slayer's agility and later a slayer's skill with a weapon. You blew everyone away at archery, whether it was at camp or in school. And I knew that you were one of us, and that I'd have to train you, despite your remaining weakness."
Joss sat up in bed slowly, wrapping his arms around his legs, clutching his knees to his chest. He wasn't angry. He wasn't sad. Not about the things that his uncle was saying. He was just disappointed in himself for having been such a, well, disappointment. "What weakness? What weakness do I still possess?" Abraham sat forward in his chair, his eyes expressing a sorrow that Joss didn't quite understand.
"You care about people, Joss. And though that is an admirable quality for a normal person to possess, you are a slayer. Closeness, caring, these things can only harm a slayer in the end, and will prove a terrible weakness in the armor of the society. In truth, I'd hoped you'd fail at enough tests that I would be forced to send you home, to convince the society that I had made a mistake about you, that you weren't a slayer after all."
Joss rested his chin on his knees, watching his covers with false interest. He took in his uncle's words and realized that by hoping he would fail, that by doing everything within his power to make Joss fail, Abraham had actually been trying to protect him. From what? Vampires, certainly, but more than that. From everything that Cyrus had been telling him. From a lonely, dangerous life without anyone to share it with. But then, didn't Cyrus have Kat? Surely he'd been close enough to someone in order to have a child. Surely there was a chance, even a small one, that Joss could live a basically normal life outside his slayer duties. It was possible, wasn't it?
"Initially, I tried to talk headquarters out of the decision that you were the next slayer in my bloodline, but they were adamant. And then, when I asked what would become of you should you desert the society after your induction, they instructed me to take your life."
Joss met his eyes, surprise and fear filling him. Abraham nodded.
It's a protocol for such situations, but I had to ask. Once I received my instructions, I turned to leave, but by the time my hand touched the door, my mind was set. I knew I could not allow my nephew to perish, and that with your sensitivities, your weaknesses, you would be better off living a life without the binds of the society. I turned back to the man in charge and pleaded with him to grant me a single favor. And he did. He said that if you should fail at your training before induction, you could go free.
Joss's heart raced with the knowledge his uncle had shared. Was it true? Abraham had only been so hard on him so that he could save Joss from a life in the Slayer Society? Why hadn't he just told him in the beginning? But Joss didn't have to ask that. The Society wouldn't want Joss to have an easy out, so Abraham had likely been sworn to silence.
I thought it would be easy to make you fail.
Abraham spoke softly, with more kindness than Joss had ever heard his uncle use before.
But then you passed my tests, at times with flying colors. You've bested men with skill beyond their years of experience and succeeded in ways I had not deemed even remotely possible, especially not for a boy with such incredible weakness. But despite that weakness, you have an inner strength unlike any I have ever seen, Joss, and I will be proud one day to call you a slayer. That is, if you still want to after hearing all that I've told you, which I shouldn't be doing.
Joss lifted his head and met his uncle's eyes, which were shining with pride. Suddenly, his insides felt lighter. He had something he'd convinced himself that he'd never have, his uncle's approval and the love of a family member. For a moment, he forgot about Kat and everything that had happened. He forgot about his healing wounds and the way his muscles ached. All he focused on was the admiration in Abraham's eyes. It was wonderful. So wonderful, in fact, that a large lump formed in Joss's throat, rendering him unable to speak. Abraham reached out and patted him on the shoulder roughly, an almost smile on his lips. When Joss found his voice, it came out with a croak.
I do. Very much, Uncle. I want to be a slayer.
That day is fast approaching, Joss, but there are still a few tasks at hand that need tending to.
Joss could feel moistness in his eyes, but blinked it away before his uncle could notice.
What tasks? I'm game.
Abraham patted him again and stood.
Meet me in the clearing in 20 minutes. In just 3 more minor tasks, you can be indoctrinated into the Slayer Society. And these last 3 are where it gets fun. The worst of your training is over.
Joss clung to those last 7 words like they were a lifeline. The worst was over. His uncle had said it. And Abraham wasn't a man to lie about something like that. Joss pulled the covers off and hurried out of bed, a perma-smile on his face.
I'll shower and be right out.
Abraham chuckled.
Grab some breakfast first. After yesterday, you certainly earned a good meal.
Joss nodded, still smiling, and Abraham walked out of his room, closing the door behind him. After grabbing some clothes, Joss hurried through a shower and bounded down the stairs. Cyrus was nowhere to be found, but after last night's ordeal with Kat, he wasn't exactly surprised. He made a mental note to stop over and check on Cyrus once he'd completed the task that Abraham had set up for him, and then filled a bowl with cereal and milk. After wolfing it down, he headed outside and up the hill along the trail until he could see the clearing up ahead of him. A strange scent was in the air, like smoldering ashes and decay. As he drew closer to the clearing, he saw why. Abraham and the other slayers were there, all but Cyrus, of course, and at the center of the clearing were 2 bodies. Their skin was charred and their eyes stared unblinking up at the sky, but their chests still rose and fell. Joss's breakfast edged its way up his throat, threatening to leave him. He paused in his steps, looking away from the gruesome scene, trying desperately to ease his sudden, growing nausea. If he threw up, he'd never hear the end of it. Once his stomach had settled to a more manageable point, Joss continued into the clearing, standing to Abraham's right, waiting for his uncle to give him his task. a task that would hopefully take him far away from the charred near corpses in front of him. Early this morning, we located the vampire outpost. These two beasts were inside, unaware that they'd been detected. We waited until first light, then dragged them outside into the sun. Luckily, they were pretty allergic, but not enough to kill them. Only enough to subdue them. Which is actually really fortunate for you, nephew, as ridding the world of these monsters in very specific ways is part of your training. Abraham held up a small silver hatchet. It gleamed in the morning light. The side of that glint seemed abnormally sharp, like the metal itself. He held it out to Joss.
So, are you ready to take the next step to becoming a slayer, nephew?
Joss looked from the hatchet to the vampires. They looked so human. Two eyes, a mouth, two ears, hands, arms, legs, and hearts. Did they feel? Did they know how? Did they know how to love as much as they seemed to know how to hate and destroy? Joss didn't know. And all of a sudden, he didn't know if he had what it took to be a slayer. It was one thing to fight with his fellow slayers. It was quite another to take a life. He shook his head slowly and took two steps back. He needed to think. He needed to think about what he was doing and why he was here before he did something so drastic, so unbelievably horrific and violent. Before there was no turning back. As he turned away from the clearing, Abraham's voice found his ears, stopping him in his tracks.
Whatever happened to the vampire, the creature, the monster that killed your younger sister, Joss? Did it leave her room that night with a full belly, content with the murder it had committed? Do you suppose it felt any compassion at all for that sweet, innocent child before it ruthlessly took her young life? Do you suppose it was so overcome with regret that it gave up its vampiric ways and took its own life?
Joss gripped his hands into fists, his body tensing at the memory of that night, the night he lost Cecile. No. Abraham stepped closer, dropping his voice so that only he and Joss were privy to his words.
No, it didn't. That bastard moved on to other children, other sisters and brothers, perhaps, and murdered each of them with a defiant, bloody grin. You know it, just as you know that one of those things lying in that clearing could be the one who did it. You can right the wrong it committed that night, Joss. But only you can do it. Only you can lay Cecile's soul to rest. So are you going to man up and do it? Or has this all been just for show?
Joss closed his eyes and images of his sister raced through his mind, flipping like photographs in an album. Cecile in her crib. Cecile taking her first steps. To Joss, of all people. Cecile leaving for her first day of kindergarten. Cecile, dead in her bed. A vampire whose face he couldn't recall poised over her with blood-stained lips. Cecile's blood. He opened his eyes and grabbed the hatchet from his uncle's hands, wordlessly turning back to the clearing. He approached the two charred creatures with a confident step, though his actual confidence was absolutely lacking. With a shuddering breath, he raised the hatchet high and whispered aloud three words that he clung to. Three words that would get him through every act he could not face alone. To remind himself exactly why he was doing this, exactly why he'd come here in the first place.
For you, Cecile.
Then he brought the hatchet down as hard as he could, his aim sure, his arm strong. As he did, a piece of his soul fluttered off into the air, like ash in the wind. Hours later, once the monsters had been beheaded and the remains disposed of, the slayers sat around a campfire in that same clearing. Mugs were filled with foamy drinks, songs were sung, and Joss sat on a large stone near the fire, his blood-soaked hands still trembling wildly. In his mind, He kept repeating his sister's name, but it brought him no solace. There was nothing comforting about what he had just done to those vampires, and nothing just about the way that he felt now. Afterward, his uncle had assured him that the act would get easier, that everyone experiences doubt after their first few kills, but that he'd done exactly what he needed to do in order to ensure the safety of all mankind, and to avenge Cecile. But Joss didn't want to hear those words of comfort and assurance. He wanted to forget that it had happened. He wanted to wash away the blood and go home to his mom and dad, but he couldn't. He was in too deep. Abraham gave his shoulder a squeeze and held up his glass. The other slayers followed suit.
"Today, my nephew, you became a man. And due to your bravery and unfailing loyalty in the face of danger, soon we'll call you brother and count you among our ranks. Slayers, we drink to Joss."
Morgan, Ash, Creation, Abraham, Patty, every slayer in their gathered group raised their mug then in excited pride, toasting to Joss and celebrating his success. But Joss couldn't raise his eyes to see them do so. All he could do was stare at the blood on his hands and wonder how much more there would be. Chapter 24. Absent Friends. That night, after a long hot shower, Joss retired to his room. He had been planning to speak to Cyrus, but honestly just couldn't face anyone until he'd had some time alone. In the shower, he let the scalding hot water wash away the blood, sending it swirling down the drain and away from Joss's shaking hands. But the blood wasn't alone. It mixed with Joss's tears, tears that fell in steady streams down Joss's cheeks. He cried without mercy, for Cecile, for the vampires he'd murdered, yes, but mostly for himself. It was shameful to feel so much pity for oneself, especially in this case, but Joss couldn't stop the tears from coming. He hoped the water was loud enough to mask his weeping, but couldn't be sure. Once the worst of his self-pity was over, he turned off the water and toweled himself dry before heading to his room for some much-needed solace. He didn't sleep. He didn't think. He didn't relive any of the moments of his day. He merely lay in bed and stared at the ceiling for 8 hours, pushing away all emotion until the sun had risen again. Then he dressed and went downstairs to find Cyrus, to see how he was doing and if Kat had left without a fight. Cyrus wasn't in the kitchen, nor could he recall having seen Cyrus at all the day before. Eerily, he saw no one on his way outside and next door, something he was consciously grateful for. He stepped up on Cyrus's porch and knocked before opening the door and sticking his head inside. "Cyrus, you home?" But what he saw made his heart sink. Cyrus's paintings were gone, as were Kat's video games, butterfly net, and books. He stepped inside, moving from this room to that. The house wasn't empty, but Cyrus and Kat were nowhere to be found.
"We suspect he left sometime yesterday."
Abraham was standing near the front door, looking troubled.
"I didn't want to say anything to you until you'd had time to recover a bit. A first kill can be..."
"Traumatic? I know. You said so." Joss pushed away his uncle's acknowledgement of his horrific act and shook his head, his heart sinking some at the idea that Cyrus would have just abandoned him without as much as a word. He didn't even say goodbye. Not a note or anything. I can't believe he'd just leave like that. We were... friends. Abraham cast his eyes slowly around the room. It was the first time Joss had remembered seeing his uncle at Cyrus's house.
"Cyrus's loyalty has been in question for some time, by both the society and yours truly. But even I was surprised to find that he'd defected. Foolish, stupid. He knows what awaits him."
Joss glanced at his uncle with a question. "What awaits him, exactly? What happens to a slayer who defects?" Abraham didn't speak for a moment, but when he did, his tone was serious and deadly.
"He'll be banished, but it's a bit more complicated than that."
Joss nodded, even though he didn't really understand what his uncle had meant, and moved toward the door. As he passed Abraham, His uncle stopped him with a hand to his chest. Abraham's tone was grave.
It would be best, nephew, if you learned now not to ask questions. Questions require answers, and answers can cause trouble. You wouldn't want the society to view you as a troublemaker now, would you?
Joss shook his head, feeling his heart flutter a bit in uncertainty and fear. His words came out in a whisper.
No. No, of course not.
Abraham removed his hand and Joss stepped outside. The air felt oddly heavy and stale, the sun too hot on his face. On the surface, it was a beautiful day, but what someone sees on the surface isn't necessarily what's real. Cyrus was gone. Cat too. Joss was left with nothing but his duty to avenge Cecile. Maybe it was better that way. Maybe being alone with his utter hatred of vampires was what he really needed. Maybe Abraham had been right, and his caring compassion for other people really was a weakness. Joss wondered why he hadn't seen it before now, that his friendship with Cyrus and Kat had been such a terrible distraction from his reason for coming here, his reason for moving on after Cecile's death. He vowed to himself, and to Cecile's restless spirit, that he would experience no further distractions. Not until he'd located the vampire that had stolen her away and made it suffer like no other had suffered before. Once they were both outside, Abraham leaned closer, his hand on Joss's shoulder, and said,
I have another task for you, if you're up for it. This one will bring you ever closer to your goal, ever closer to becoming indoctrinated into the society. But it will take an amazing amount of strength, Joss. I won't lie to you about that, or cater to your fear. Yesterday, you faced the worst of it, but today will be a challenge. I'll leave it to you to decide whether or not you want to face this task. There's no shame in it if you can't. But if you can, meet us in the clearing after lunch. If you can't, there's a train ticket lying on your nightstand. You decide.
Abraham walked away then, leaving Joss staring up into the too bright sky. When he finally looked away, his vision was marred by dots of light, spots of shadow every time he blinked. A passing thought entered his mind, remarking on the strange similarities between darkness and light, and he wondered what he was representing now. Was he light? Dark? Was he doing the right thing at all costs? For a while he'd viewed Abraham's tests as a cruel fate, a form of sadistic torture, but everything that he had seen reflected otherwise. Abraham was doing good. He was doing everything within his power to train Joss to do what it was that he'd come here to do, to take down vampires. Joss was weak. He knew that now. And he was wrong to question the society's wisdom, wrong to question his uncle's motives. Joss wished deeply that he could be more like his cousins, Greg and Henry, who would never question the things that they were told, who would never hesitate in doing what had to be done. Their loyalty, like that of most Macmillans, was unfailing and admirable. Joss was a rebel in that regard, and that fact deeply embarrassed him, his need to question, and his disgusting need to act on those questions. Dark questions invaded his thoughts, like a disturbing voice in the back of his mind that insisted on spreading rumors that only he could hear, rumors about his uncle's motives, rumors about whether or not he was acting wisely. Only through focus and determination could he squash that self-doubt, that questioning, and only through the wisdom of the society could he avenge his sister's death. He was deeply ashamed of his tears last night and vowed not to cry again, not to give in to the shadow of doubt that loomed over his experience in the clearing. Beheading the monsters had been an ugly thing, but it had also been just. It had also been right. Hadn't it? Joss shook his head, willing that doubt away. No more. From now on, he would never doubt his actions. He would trust in the society and follow their whims, and through that loyalty, he would be rewarded. He crossed the yard and entered the cabin, moving quickly, silently through the house until he reached his bedroom door. On his nightstand lay the train ticket, as promised by his uncle. On his nightstand also sat the pocket watch, and beside that a small frame. The watch was a reminder of his grandfather and everything he had given for the cause of the Slayer Society. Everything maybe that Joss would give someday himself. Captured within the frame was a photo of Cecile, A smile forever frozen on her young face. Joss picked up the train ticket and tore it in half, then in fourths, then in eighths, before tossing it in the trash can. He was staying, for all the right reasons. Then he sat on his bed and stared at the clock, waiting for noon to come. When it finally did, hours later, he moved through the house again, not stopping for food, and headed outside to the clearing. When he reached his uncle and the others, he was greeted with looks of admiration. Abraham stepped closer to him, a smile on his face.
I'm so proud of you, Joss. It takes a real man to face the evil of these monsters once, let alone repeatedly. And though you haven't yet been indoctrinated, we wanted you to know, and I speak for everyone here, that we count you among our ranks already. In your heart, you are a slayer, and part of our group forever.
Morgan moved closer then, holding something silver in his hand.
We usually wait until after the indoctrination for this, but we figure that won't be too far off anyway. Besides, as Abraham said, you're one of us now, forever a part of our family. So take this.
Then he handed Joss a silver hatchet that gleamed in the light.
It's your first weapon. Care for it. Don't lose it. And swing it with absolute purpose.
Joss tightened his grip on the handle, marveling at the heft of the tool. His first weapon. He could hardly believe it. Ash moved forward and spoke then, his voice kinder than Joss had ever heard it before.
We want you to remember that no matter where you go, no matter what you face, you are not alone. We're with you, Joss. Always.
Kreshen thrust a small item he'd been cupping in his hand into Joss's other palm.
Keep this safe. Keep it forever. It means you're one of us.
Joss slowly held his hand out in front of him and peeled his fingers back, revealing a thick metal coin. On one side were graven images, a crescent moon, a stake, and an infinity symbol. On the other were letters in an old English script, SS for Slayer Society, along with a quote that Joss desperately wanted to cling to. It made him feel safe. It made his actions, even those of yesterday, seem just and right and good and necessary. It read, "For the good of mankind." As Joss closed his hand over the coin, squeezing it tight in his fist, Abraham spoke again.
It's a Slayer coin. We use them to identify one another in the field. If you produce a coin and the person you're with doesn't, they're not one of us and therefore not privy to discussing all the details of the Slayer Society. It's a time-honored tradition, going back hundreds of years. And now you're a part of it, nephew. Forever.
Kreshen slapped Joss on the back and grinned.
Now let's go kill us some vampires.
Joss blinked up at his uncle.
There are more?
Ash chuckled.
There are always more. Damn things are everywhere, and it's our job to snuff them out before they infect the entire planet.
I just thought that the two from yesterday...
Joss swallowed, trying hard not to conjure up the images in his mind of charred bodies and blood.
I thought they were the only two from the outpost you found.
Morgan interjected.
They were. But we found another outpost this morning, a cave about halfway up the mountain. We would have gone in after them, but we were waiting for solid daylight, and you, of course. Wouldn't want you to miss out on all the fun.
As Joss swept his gaze over the group, he noticed that each was armed with a wooden stake. Kreshen had his in a leather baldric that crossed his chest. Patty had hers in a leather strap around her thigh. Abraham's was in his leather hip holster. Each of them was well armed, and all that Joss was carrying was a coin and a hatchet. He suddenly felt inept and unprepared.
When will I get a stake of my own?
Ash chuckled.
You have to earn your stake, and though you've performed admirably, you're not quite there yet, Joss. Get indoctrinated, then the society will decide when you're worthy of a stake.
Joss frowned, concern crossing his thoughts briefly, concern that he didn't share with the others, but which was apparently written all over his face. Abraham patted him roughly on the back.
Don't worry, you'll earn it. We all did. For now, you'll be charged with beheading the beasts after we drag them outside. You've got a knack for wielding an axe, after all.
Joss's heart skipped a beat. When Joss looked down at the hatchet in his hands, his heart skipped another beat, but he willed it to steady its rhythm and nodded to his uncle with a confidence that he didn't really feel. He slid the coin into his front jeans pocket with one hand and gripped the hatchet with the other. His hands were steady, but it took an immense amount of control to keep them so. He would not show weakness in front of his fellow slayers. And he was one of them now, they'd said, and he would never again give them reason to doubt his loyalty. They were his family now, and he would face down any danger that threatened them, that threatened any human. He would do so without question, without doubt, and with more courage than he had ever dared to use before, because their cause was a just one, and through them, Cecile would one day find salvation. As they made their way up the mountainside, Joss kept his head clear. He didn't think about the task at hand, didn't relive his first beheading experience, didn't think about Cyrus or Cad or the comforts of home. He merely hiked upward with his fellow slayers, ready for whatever the day would bring. The day was still bright, but as the sun drifted through the trees, it didn't seem as bright as it had earlier in the day. Joss could gaze up at the sky without it hurting his eyes, could walk in the beams of light without thinking they felt too hot or that the air felt suffocating. Everything seemed clearer now. Joss had obtained a focus and clarity unlike anything he had ever experienced before. He was, as the slayers had attempted to assist him with weeks ago, pure. As they reached the crest of a hill, Abraham silently gestured to the other slayers, all but Joss, and they split into groups, moving off into the woods. They must be close to the outpost. Joss looked to his uncle for direction. Abraham pointed to a large nearby oak and then to Joss, indicating that Joss should wait there until they withdrew the first vampire. Joss moved into position, clutching the hatchet tightly to his chest, and waited. The sounds of the forest filled Joss's ears, peaceful sounds of birds and breezes and furry things moving about through the undergrowth. For a moment, the serenity calmed his nerves, but it was a false calm, one that offered a promise of a quiet, easy day, one that lied through the sweet sounds and smells of nature. But Joss wouldn't hear its lies. He was ready, poised to act, awaiting Abraham's signal. A howl, accompanied by a sizzling sound, echoed through the trees, followed shortly by Abraham's stern voice. Joss! No! Joss whipped around the tree, his fingers tingling with numbness from clutching the hatchet so tightly, his heart racing with adrenaline and a fear that he refused to acknowledge. Abraham was standing over a vampire which looked as though it had been set aflame by means other than the sun. Two other slayers had staked down its wrists in a clear effort to hold it until Joss had removed its head. Why they hadn't staked its heart, Joss had no idea, but he suspected that today wasn't just an ordinary job for the group. He suspected that this was another test, another means for Joss to prove his loyalty to the society. He raised the hatchet high above his head and brought it down, blocking out the screams that echoed through the forest, not knowing if they belonged to the vampire or himself. When he was finished, Ash and Patty cleared away the remains, and Joss took his position behind the tree again. He didn't look at his hands, and without realizing it, he was grateful that the forest contained no reflective surfaces, as he couldn't have stood to look at himself at that moment. But he was doing his duty as a slayer. All that he had done, and would continue to do, was for the good of mankind, and for the release of Cecile's tormented soul. After three more vampires, Joss was feeling numb. He told himself that the beheadings were no different than cutting wood for the fire, and he got through each mindlessly, doing his job, pretending he was somewhere else, keeping himself removed from each terrible, horrific situation. "One more, Joss! Get ready!" his uncle shouted. A hand closed over Joss's mouth and yanked him away from the tree, spinning him about so fast that for a second he could not breathe. When the phantom hand released him, Joss looked around but didn't recognize the part of the forest he was in. There was no trail nearby,